we probably don't realize how much our emotional state affects them sometimes and how our energy affects them.
You're listening to the Believe in Dog podcast. I'm your host and resident dog mom, Erin Scott. Not only can a dog be your best friend, but I believe a dog can be a healer, a teacher, and an inspiration. I can't wait to share with you stories of how the love of a dog is changing our lives and changing the world. This is Believe in Dog. Welcome to episode 66 of the Believe in Dog podcast. I'm your host, Erin Scott, and thank you so much for being here today. You know, one of the reasons I started this podcast is because I like having conversations about all the different ways that the love of a dog can impact our life. And it's different for different people. You know, I've had people on here who have written books or, you know, started nonprofit organizations, and many, many, many other stories and ways that dogs are impacting each and every one of our lives. One of the other things that I really enjoy is finding how my story connects to that of our guest. And it's always interesting to me that no matter who the guest is, whether they're somebody who grew up right down the street from me, a friend from Baltimore, or whether there's somebody who grew up in India or Europe or somewhere on the other side of the world, that we can always find commonalities and common grounds and kindred spirits in each other. And that's been something really exciting that has showed up in all different ways in this podcast. And I'm really excited to share this conversation today with Caroline Edmonds of Dog Mom Mentality. I know February was Pet Dental Health Month, but we really need to think about our dog's dental health all year round. I recently learned that 80% of our dogs over 3 years old have active dental or periodontal disease. And dental disease is actually a sign of other inflammation in the body and can be connected to everything from cardiovascular problems, kidney problems, fatty liver disease, diabetes, certain types of cancers, joint disease, pulmonary conditions. Your dog's dental health actually can affect everything in their body. And you know that I am obsessed with finding the best and healthiest products for our dogs. So I was so excited to find out about Teef. That's right, Teef. Just a tiny spoonful of Teef powder in your dog's water bowl will make a huge improvement in your dog's dental health. It's the only thing that ever made my vet stop and go, "Hey, what did you do with Penny's teeth? They actually look so much better." So forget trying to figure out how to get your dog's teeth brushed without them biting you. Forget those sticks or green chews. What you need is Teef powder, just a tiny amount in your dog's water bowl. And listeners of this podcast can save 20% on your Teef order with the code ADM. And you'll be on your way to a healthier smile for your dog without any anesthesia needed. Check out the link in the show notes to find out more about Teef and save 20% on your orders. Caroline is probably about 20 years younger than me. And at one point, she says that she was in middle school when Britney Spears had her mental health breakdown. And I was thinking, oh, I was already married and living in my house. But like with many things in the world, it doesn't matter your age or, you know, your gender or your race or your religion. We all have a lot more in common than we do that separates us when we take the time to look for it anyway. And Caroline and I are going to touch on the topic today of mental health and how our dogs can affect our mental health, both for the better and even sometimes for the worse. One of the things I so genuinely, incredibly appreciate about Caroline is her honesty. She shares how she was incredibly naive when her and her boyfriend were deciding to get a dog. In fact, Caroline's honest that she wasn't even really the one that wanted to get the dog. It was all pretty much her boyfriend, Bobby. And you know what? That's something I relate with too, because I've often said I was a bit of a reluctant dog owner in the beginning, and it was definitely my husband, Tim, who really wanted the dog. And much like my situation, Caroline found that getting a dog completely changed her life and gave her a new identity that she wasn't expecting. But where I lucked out, and our first dog, Lucy, was an incredibly easy dog that made it so easy for me to just fall in love with dogs, Caroline wasn't so lucky with Layla. Because Layla started developing some reactivity and fear aggression issues, and that really impacted Caroline's mental health situation. So she started sharing about it and being really honest about how her dog's behavior was affecting her own anxiety. Her dog's anxiety was giving her anxiety. I think you'll really appreciate how Caroline shares about her journey to not only get herself in a better place mentally and emotionally, but also to help get her dog into a better place mentally and emotionally and behaviorally. You know, sometimes I think that being a good dog owner, pet parent, it doesn't always mean that you're not going to run into problems, but it's what you do when you run into those problems. And I feel like we can't ask Caroline and Bobby to have done anything more. They have done all the things. And Caroline used this experience to create something called the Growing and Healing Journal. And this is her process for dealing with her own emotions. Caroline has now made accessible to each and every one of us. I think this is a really special conversation, and I'm really glad I got to tackle this issue of mental health. I'm so excited for you to meet Caroline Edmonds. So we are here today with Caroline from Dog Mom Mentality. Hi, Caroline. How are you?
I am doing well. How are you?
I am great. I'm so excited to talk to you.
Yes, me too. I love talking to new people about all the things, so feel free to ask me anything and everything.
I always love to start out by asking about your childhood experiences with dogs.
Okay.
Because I am not somebody who grew up with dogs. I didn't even know I liked dogs until I was 25. And so I'm always curious what that looks like for other people. So what was your childhood experience with pets?
Okay, that's actually really funny, and nobody's ever really asked me this, but I had a dog growing up. Actually, I had two dogs. So one was whenever I was about maybe a year old to about 4 years old, and then my parents rehomed him. And then we got another dog whenever I was eight. He was a toy poodle named Shakespeare. He had the same color hair as me. That's all I wanted. I wanted somebody else in my family to have this like reddish auburn tint hair because neither of my parents had it. So I specifically kept asking for like a red poodle. So we got Shakespeare whenever I was eight. He was a toy poodle, only got up to like 15 or 18 pounds, like very, very small. And I was not really into him. You know what I mean? It's funny. Like I definitely, you know, did what I needed to, but I was not like into dogs, if that makes sense. Like I had one, but I wasn't into it. And he was really just like a lap dog anyways. He didn't really do a whole lot. And so I never really considered myself a dog person. Even whenever we got Layla, my husband and I, we were dating in college and he really wanted a dog. And he had grown up with sports dogs, like hunting dogs. So he was, you know, experienced in having hunting dogs and then also having pet dogs. And so he really wanted a dog. It was our last semester of college. And I was like, okay, we'll get one. Like you have to take care of it. It's going to live with you. You're going to do all the work for it. And like, I will, you know, help you with money and doing things on the weekends, whatever, but like, it's going to be more your dog. So actually, whenever we got Layla, it was intended for her to be more of his dog, his responsibility. And over the summer, right after we got her, he started going into work. I was working from home. And so that's whenever I actually started to take on more responsibility of her. But yeah, my childhood experience with dogs was kind of like yours in that I had a dog, but I wasn't really a dog person.
Yeah, I always joke that I was a reluctant dog owner, and I feel like you kind of fall into that category too.
For sure. Yep, that's exactly right.
Yeah, that was kind of how I had looked at it. You know, Tim really wanted a dog. We bought our house, you know, and he's like, you know, he's always wanted one. He had always like lived in all these rental places and couldn't have a dog. And so I was kind of like, all right, well, this is like his thing or whatever. Right. And then suddenly it changed my whole life.
Oh, exactly. Same here.
In the best way possible.
Yep. You are telling my story.
And so what is your husband's name?
His name's Bobby.
Okay. So Bobby wanted to get this dog. You guys are still in college. Were you living together at the time or apart?
No, we were actually living apart. We lived close to each other, but we were living apart. So we each had roommates. He had three other guys that he lived with. I had three other girls that I lived with. And so we got Layla in February of 2020. So she actually just lived with him for about a month before the quarantine. COVID. Yeah, before COVID. And we started to quarantine. And so in March, mid-March, we moved into my mom's house, and it was me, Bobby, and Layla together. So even then, like, he still did more of the work with her, but like, we were together pretty much 24/7 because of the pandemic.
And how old was Layla when you guys got her?
She was 16 weeks old, I believe. So she is a Craigslist puppy, which I would not go down that route again. Just putting that out there. But we found her, or he found her on Craigslist, went and got her, and she was, I think, 15 or 16 weeks old. So she was still pretty much a puppy.
Yeah. And what kind of dog is she?
She is an Aussie mix. She is 50% Aussie, and then the other 50% is a mix of different herding breeds.
Because that sounds like very high strung to me.
Yeah. She, we were told she was going to be a mini Australian Shepherd, and she's not mini. She's like 60 pounds. But the only reference that I had to an Australian Shepherd was my mom's boyfriend. And he had an Australian Shepherd that was just amazing. She was such a good dog. But I've only known her since she was like an adult dog and like had been trained with him. And so I never really knew her as a puppy. And so I just kept thinking, well, Stofie was my mom's boyfriend's dog. Sophie's a great dog. She's an Australian Shepherd. She seems like really well behaved and super well trained and listens to him. So like, I'm sure if we get an Australian Shepherd, she's going to be great. She's going to be great just like that dog. And so that was really my only reference that I had. And, you know, it kind of neglected that the work that you have to put in to get a dog to that stage. You know, I was pretty naive. I was a very naive dog owner and thinking that, you know, if it was an Aussie, then she was just going to be perfect right off the bat. And, you know, completely forgot that you have to like put in any kind of work to get a dog there. So, you know, we definitely did like all of the cute little tricks that you teach every dog: sit, shake, lay down. We did teach her leave it, but like we really didn't start getting into training until she was a year old. It was the day after she turned a year old that I started getting into training with her for her like different reactivity issues, behavioral issues, and confidence building.
So I've heard you talk about you've had like phases to being a dog mom, and I relate with this in my own way too.
Yeah.
So do you want to tell us like a little bit of the timeline of your phases with Layla?
Right. Okay. Yeah, for sure. I love this topic too. I think it's such an interesting way to like time it out and just like lay out all
like
the
how
different
we evolve.
Pieces.
Yeah.
Yeah. So like I said, I wasn't really into like getting a dog. Like, I mean, I was okay with it, but I wasn't going to be the main one, the main person with responsibilities. So that's kind of phase one. Phase two was that we moved into the house that we currently live in, me, Bobby, and Layla, and she started showing some fear. She started showing some reactivity whenever we were walking. And I didn't really know much about training, and I kind of felt like, well, if she doesn't like, you know, walking on our street or off of our street, if she gets scared, then I just won't do it. And so, you know, for a really long time, we didn't even walk off of our street because she was so fearful. And I didn't realize that that was like something that could be fixed. I didn't realize it had a name. And, you know, there was a lot of things that I just was really naive about at the time. You know, I didn't really understand biological fulfillment and play and, you know, doing different things with her to get that energy out in a different way. So probably at that time, she was very unfulfilled. We would describe her as on edge. I specifically remember me and Bobby saying she's a very like on edge dog. And this was only whenever she was like 8 or 9 months old. So there was a lot of stuff working against her at that point. but at the same time, I was very naive and like, I didn't know what I didn't know kind of thing. I was also really struggling with a lot of anxiety at that time too, with just transitioning out of college and starting a new job. And we had some issues with our landlord. There was just like a lot of things piling up. So, you know, at the time I really saw Layla as more of just a thing that was causing me more stress. And I didn't really do anything to fix it. I just saw her as a problem, if that makes sense. And so that's when my husband, Bobby, he started to go to work. So he'd work in an office or he would travel for work. And so I started to take on more responsibilities for Layla, which was another shift. And, you know, I did all of the necessities for her, feeding, taking her out, whatever, but no real training. You know, playing was just throwing a ball a few times. And we really just coexisted. It's funny, but we always say that at that time, it was like we were stepsisters, that we were just two people like living in the same house. And so then the next phase was really kind of like the breaking point, as I call it. And that's whenever she started to show some aggression in her crate. And it was like me and my husband, we were just so overwhelmed. We were like, what's going on? What's happening? And looking back on it now, it makes a lot of sense because, you know, at the time she was probably unfulfilled. She's probably really anxious. She probably had a lot of energy. And, you know, there were times that I had to just kind of get her into the crate very quickly because of our landlord coming over unannounced. And I think all of those things piling up led to her aggression. But at the time, we just could not see that. And I can't like emphasize this enough, but I was in a really bad headspace at that point in my life. And so seeing other people's feelings, how they feel, having empathy for them, having understanding was like, I didn't have capacity to do that, if that makes sense. I was very much like in my own world and like anything else was just a problem. And so at the time I was very like narrow-minded, narrow-focused, and like not realizing that all of these things kind of piling up was that big of a problem for Layla, or that many stressors for Layla. You know, now we talk about like trigger stacking and, you know, making sure dogs have their decompression time. And like, that was nothing that I ever thought about. But at the time I just was like, this is a really big problem. Like I can't handle her being aggressive towards us. That's huge. And then, you know, as soon as we would actually close the crate door, she was fine. But she's such a smart dog. And so whenever her aggression started to escalate, it would also come out and she'd realize patterns. Like before we put her up in our crate, we would go out on a walk. And so she would start to show those signs of aggression whenever we would go to take her out for her walk or her, you know, her evening walk or take her leash off before she went to bed. And so that was just like, just so like agitating and frustrating and scary sometimes. It was like a lot of feelings, but I was just like kind of this big ball of stress. And so that was, you know, a month to 2 months before her first birthday. And so at her first birthday, I was like, okay, we are going to do something about this. So that's when I started working through some training with her, some of her reactivity issues, very structured, very like routine. And we made a lot of accomplishments coming out of that phase. I felt more like manageable. I felt like I was able to breathe. She was able to be managed. And then I started to realize that like everything was very transactional. We didn't really have like a relationship. And so then I started to dive more into the world of play and biological fulfillment and, you know, making sure both of us are fulfilled. And then that's kind of from that point, that's where we got to like a maintenance period to where now we don't really do a ton of like active training or learning new things. We, you know, focus on stuff that we use daily or like weekly that we use often. So, you know, heal, recall, stay, that kind of stuff. And then, you know, we'll work on new things here and there. But everything now is more of just like a maintenance, not really teaching anything super new. But around this time last year, I fell into a pretty deep depression. And it was the first time that I had ever like experienced a depression episode. And that really rocked my world. I don't know if you've ever dealt with this or, you know, if any listeners have ever dealt with depression, but like it really just turns you upside down, especially if it's the first time and you, you know, your whole life, I was working to not have depression, to prevent depression, because I knew that genetically I was predisposed to it. And so I worked really, really hard to not have it. And then whenever I did have it, this like resistance that I had with it, it just like kept growing and growing. And like my depression kept getting deeper and deeper. And it wasn't really until I like accepted it that I was able to move on from that. But during that time, I would say from like January until April of last year, I was really depressed. And so I was super unmotivated with Layla. And I felt really guilty for not doing as much for her. And, you know, we were still like doing all the necessities and we were still training every day, but it just wasn't as like energetic and it didn't have the flow that it used to. And like, I could tell there was some tension between us and also some tension between my other relationships as well. Like that's just what happens whenever you become depressed. But, you know, eventually what actually got me out of it was accepting that I had it and actually hearing that I was diagnosed with it. It was a really big deal for me. And I was able to move on from that. And then that's where we kind of are at today is, you know, in this like maintenance period where, you know, we aren't teaching new things like very often, but we will. And, you know, I focus a little bit more on me. And basically all of 2021 was focused on Layla. So now I'm trying to, you know, balance it out and focus it a little bit more on me and her, making sure we're both fulfilled, making sure, you know, all of our needs are met and just, you know, sustaining a very like healthy, happy, enjoyable life. So that's where we're at today. And a lot of that comes with a lot of reflection. So things that I did wrong, things that, you know, could have gone better, why I did certain things at certain times. You know, this whole dog mom phases kind of came out of me looking to see like what was going on in my life at each of those points. What did I learn from it? What did I gain? What did, you know, how could things have gone differently? What was going on with my mental health? Like, you know, just kind of like analyzing all those things and getting and pulling lessons out of each of those different phases.
That is what I kind of love about you. And I think that that's something that's really special. And I'm excited to see like modeled specifically like in how it relates to your relationship with your dog too. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I've been going to therapy for the better part of 20 years now, you know, and my husband has off and on too. Sometimes we've gone together. And I think what I think is special about he and I's relationship, right, is that we do these things, right? And we'll talk right about these things and we'll get into these long conversations. And whether it's about us or, you know, what, or our relationships with other people or our relationships with our dogs. And like, right. I wish that was like a skill that could be like taught and, you know, to help people, you know, do this.
Totally. But, you know,
this like reflective piece. And I don't know if that comes with therapy, because I think in some ways I've kind of always done it, but therapy is like a great set of tools to kind of like help you do it in like a productive manner.
Mm-hmm. Totally. Yeah. That's like kind of my overall bigger mission is just to help people, you know, get more emotional intelligence, be more reflective, have more empathy for one another and connect with yourself more, because I talk about it in relationship with my dog, but I'm a firm believer that if you apply it in one area of your life, that it will trickle into other areas of your life.
Absolutely.
You know, such as your relationship with your husband or your wife or coworkers, friends, work, whatever. And like, I know that therapy isn't always super accessible due to, you know, cost or your living, whatever.
Insurance and yeah.
Yeah. And so, you know, just getting this information out there in any way possible, like, I think makes such a big difference. And that's one of my biggest motivators to keep talking about it. And then talking about it in relationship with my dog just comes so easily because it was something very relatable. People understood it. It wasn't me just saying like, I'm really anxious today. It was like, my dog did this and this made me really anxious. And, you know, people understand that a little bit easier than just, you know, to say I'm really anxious, if that makes sense.
Yeah. So do you want to tell us, are you somebody that like grew up in a family that went to therapy? Like, has that always been a part of your life? Or is that something that you had to like seek out on your own when you're like, oh, I want to, you know, address something in my life?
Right. So that was something that I addressed on my own. I didn't start going to therapy until 2 years ago, a year and a half, somewhere in that year and a half to 2 years ago range. And so I, as soon as I got out of college and started working on my own, I immediately went and got on a anxiety medication. And then about a year later, I started going to therapy. And so I didn't grow, well, it's kind of half and a half, if you want to know the truth. And so I kind of spoke to this a little bit earlier, just with you privately, but I grew up in a family where I saw one person that had mental health issues, and then another side just didn't really, it was very like the stereotypical, this person's lazy, this person is, you know, crazy, like not really helping, more so just, you know, just not really understanding, not really, I don't want to say like considerate, but didn't really have a ton of like mental health knowledge. You know, there's so many people that grew up thinking that mental health issues such as depression and anxiety and, you know, all the other things were just made up, and that people were just saying that they felt like that because they wanted to be lazy.
An excuse that it means that you're weak, that you don't know, you know, how to handle life. These are all things that have come out of the mouths of
yeah. So I had one side, you know, more like that. I had another side who struggled with depression and anxiety. And so it was really hard for me to kind of be a child growing up in that, seeing how they labeled the person with mental health issues. And so for a really long time, I knew that I was going to be predisposed genetically because I was related to this person. And so I, you know, really tried to prevent not having depression, not having anxiety. So I would read a ton of psychology books and research and all of these different things on how to prevent having depression and anxiety, basically. And so that was, you know, I was probably 10 or 11 whenever I started really getting into that, very, very young. And I grew up like not really on one side or the other. I just knew that I didn't want to be labeled as lazy and like an excuse. I didn't want to be labeled as lazy and crazy. You know what I mean? This was also, I like to throw this in, but this was also around the same time that Britney Spears shaved her head and was diagnosed with bipolar disorder. And so I always remember like people talking about Britney Spears in the news and then relating that back to what was going on in my family as well. And as a 10-year-old, that's like a really big deal.
And, you know, I feel like I'm glad we've at least gotten to the point now where, you know, we can say like the coverage of Britney Spears at that time was really unfair. And and I'm glad we can say that now because like I feel like we all have had those moments.
right. Yeah. It was like very influential on me, honestly. Like I remember seeing that in the news and then this also going on in my family at the exact same time. And like I would be scared to tell my friends that like, you know, this person isn't around because of X. Because, you know, everyone knew about Britney Spears. Like, all my friends were obsessed with her, me included. Like, I'm still obsessed with Britney Spears.
This is when I start feeling old.
And so, yeah, that was a really big piece. But over time, you know, whenever I started to realize that I was having some anxiety, specifically, especially in college, I had lots of anxiety. Whenever I started to realize that, I started to get more into it, not be as ashamed of it, because I sought out help for myself in my college. You know, I would go to like the college clinic and, you know, counseling that way. But anything that involved other people knowing that I was struggling, I still very much hid. And it really wasn't until I started to talk more about it on Dog Mom Mentality that I like became more open about my mental health as a whole.
I was just thinking about this when I was making some notes before we were talking. Like, I don't know that I ever heard the word anxiety until I was in college. Mm-hmm. And I was dating a guy, and I remember I was talking to his mom, and like I stayed in a relationship with him for like 2 years, and like a large part of that was because I loved his mom and his sister. But I remember, you know, I was like talking to his mom one day, and I'm just like, you know, oh my God, and I have this paper and I have to do this, and oh my God, and I'm afraid, and yeah, you know, I might do this, and I don't want to fail, and I don't want to flunk
right
college, and I, you know, and I got to get a good job, and I got to do this, and she's, you know, like, Erin, I think you have some anxiety going mm-hmm. on. And I'm kind of like, wait, what? And you know, or I would be like, oh, and you got to do this because I got to prevent this from happening. And
right.
You know, and I can't be late, and I can't, you know, I got to leave now. And she would kind of like, she was one of the first people that was ever kind of like talking to me about anxiety. And like, I just thought everybody was like this. Like mm-hmm. I thought, and especially if you're somebody like, you know, who's in like high achieving kind of stuff. Most of those people are kind of like that, you know.
Oh, 100%. 100%. Yeah.
And so, like, to me, this seemed totally normal. Like, this was what I had seen modeled for me, you know. This mm-hmm. is how I had learned to be. This is how, you know, my peers were. And it, like, had never been brought to my attention before that, like, oh, maybe this isn't healthy and maybe it doesn't have to be this way.
Yeah.
And it still took me a long time. And in some ways, I'm still trying to, like, unlearn and relearn, like, healthy patterns, you know. But I just think, I feel like it's a good thing that we have more conversation about this, that there's people, you know, there wasn't social media when I was, you know, in college, or, you know, I didn't know if anybody else was talking about this. You didn't see it talked about, you know, my parents or grandparents, you know, would like, oh, they're in therapy,
yeah. Or,
you know, like I can like hear the way that they would say it, you know.
Right.
And I've tried to be open about it when it, you know, when it makes sense, you know, to talk mm-hmm. about, you know, because a lot of my mental health struggles were very situational in that, like, you know, we lost somebody very close to us in like a very traumatic manner. Mm-hmm. And that like really set off.
Yeah, it's true.
Like a 5-year depression in me, you know, before I felt like I got my life back, you know.
Right.
You know, when I was diagnosed 5 years ago, I was diagnosed with breast cancer, and that set off like a whole struggle and right. really made me realize like how much of a mental game, for lack of a better word, it, you know, going through like physical health struggles are, like how much,
totally.
Like, you know, it's important to, you know, keep yourself mentally healthy. And like, totally. I've gotten into meditation and to journaling and things like this to try to, you know, have a better outlet, as well as continuing to go to therapy.
Yes.
So I know you just put out the Growing and Healing Journal, which I love the title of.
Pun intended.
Yeah. So do you want to tell us how that came about and what your goal is for pet parents?
Yeah, so it's a journal specifically made for dog owners. It's a guided journal. So if you are new to journaling and you've never done it before, then like it's perfect for you because it's laid out in such a way that it guides you through, you know, your thought processes and different prompts to help you gain clarity about the situation or reorient your mindset depending on what emotion you start out with. But going back to what I said earlier, you know, my mission has really always been to increase emotional intelligence and empathy and understanding and like just connecting to yourself and others, because that's kind of where understanding other people's mental health comes from, you know what I mean? And so I really just wanted to kind of close that gap, but I wanted to do it for dog owners because a lot of my anxiety and depression stemmed from dog ownership. You know, I was able to hide my anxiety up until Layla started to show her aggression. And then whenever that started happening, I was like off the rails. I was so anxious 24/7 and I couldn't hide it and I couldn't escape it. She lived with me. You know what I mean? I could not escape it. So going through that, and then, you know, whenever we did start getting into training, I was very stressed and anxious about making sure things were perfect. Everything was always a training opportunity. I held us to a very high standard. And obviously that put a lot of pressure on her and I and was not healthy at all. And so that caused a lot of anxiety as well. You know, whenever my depression hit, it was kind of after we had just got done training all the things that we could train, all the functional things that I really wanted to do with her, you know, to make our life enjoyable and easier. And after that, I was like, man, we don't really have anything to like actively work on or actively teach as much anymore. And it's kind of that thing whenever you latch on to whatever your problem is, you know. So up until January of last year, I was like, my dog's a reactive dog and I have to fix her. And so, you know, fix through training, that was kind of like the mentality. And, you know, last January, I was like, I don't have as much to do with her anymore. You know, I feel like we've really gotten a lot of things done. We're kind of in the maintenance period and I didn't have that problem anymore. So like my identity was shook. And that kind of, you know, I think was a part of my depression that I didn't identify as that like hardcore training all the time dog mom. And so, you know, both of those big mental health moments came out of dog ownership. And so growing and healing really stemmed from being able to, you know, journal and get your feelings out and process them in a way that, you know, makes sense, cope in a way that makes sense and is healthy with these dog ownership problems. You know, for me, it was more so a reactivity thing, but I set up the journal for regardless of whatever you're going through, these prompts make sense, you know, whether it be your dog is sick, you're bringing a new dog into your house, you're traveling, you know, a vet visit, whatever it is, sport trials, you name it, it can be applied to all. And so the journal is set up into four different sections. There is an intention setting section at the beginning, which is basically like, you know, just getting your head in the right space for why you want to utilize this journal, why you want to be a better dog parent, why you want to work on yourself. The second part is a goal setting section, which is divided up into 6 months. So 6 months worth of goal setting for you and your dogs. There's plenty of room for however many dogs you want. And then the bulk of the journal is the actual journal prompts, which are divided based on emotions. So there is frustrated, guilty, anxious, unmotivated, vulnerable, grateful, motivated, joyful, brave. I think I named them all, but there's 10 different emotions and then 10 pages of each emotion. And then each emotion has 5 to 6 prompts based off the emotion to help you really, you know, work through whatever you're feeling. So if it's frustrated, you know, it works through to help you reorient your mindset or, you know, have a better outlook. Or if it's anxious, you know, it kind of walks you through like you're here supporting yourself. You're doing things to support yourself. It's all going to be okay. Like here's a game plan, you know, and then with joyful or brave, it's all about remembering those moments and remembering the good times you had, being proud of yourself, having a place to document that you did a really good freaking job. And then the last section is the wins tracker. So it's just to track any wins, big and small. And it's such a good reminder to flip back to that after you've had a bad day and be like, you know what? I had a bad day today, but look at all these things that I have accomplished in the past however many months that you've been using the journal. And so that's the journal. It's available in hardbound, spiral, or ebook on my website.
I'll make sure we have links in the show notes for that.
Yeah.
How did you get introduced into journaling? Is that something you were already doing before you decided to create your own?
Yeah. So kind of going back to the like college time when I knew that I was struggling mentally and emotionally, but I didn't really come out and tell people about it. Journaling was like that safe space that I could process some of my emotions without telling it to the world. And I know a lot of people still struggle with that, still struggle with opening up to a friend or a parent or, you know, getting into therapy. And so this is like a really safe space for you to do some of that work, but it's like in a contained environment, it's safe. And that's one of the reasons that I really wanted to do a journal over, you know, a course or a workshop or a mastermind or anything else, because I wanted it to be for the people that weren't ready to open up to the world, you know, even if the world is just one person, you know, if they just weren't ready to open up. And, you know, sometimes some of these things are embarrassing with your dog.
Well, one of the things I like about what you're describing also is, you know, I look back on, I don't know if you've ever seen, there's like a meme that says something like, I feel sorry for anybody that met me, and I'm going to use the age of 30 because that was like the season one me, and we were like really underfunded and the writers were on strike, and, you know,
right.
And like, that's kind of how I feel for, you know, when I look back, but like, I didn't have a vocabulary for a very long time to even kind of be able to identify what I was struggling with or why I was anxious, or, you know, even to put a label on what I was feeling was anxiety.
Right.
And so I like that you're giving, you know, some different emotions, you know, a range of emotions. And mm-hmm. sometimes I think that's almost step one, you know, we can't even express it to somebody else if we don't have the words to express, you know, what we're feeling.
Right, right. Yep. It's right there in big bold letters at the top for when you're feeling X, for when you're feeling frustrated, for when you're feeling anxious, for when you're feeling joyful, whatever it is. You know, it's right up there at the top. And like you said, sometimes it is the first step. It's not sometimes, it is the first step to identify that emotion. And it can be so hard for people. And just to increase that emotional intelligence and learn, like, okay, when I'm feeling this, it means I'm joyful. That's great. You know, and then there's such a fine line between some of these emotions. Like, you know, sometimes you may be feeling fearful, and that could be anxious. It could be, you know, it could be excited. And sometimes I call it anticipatory anxiety. Like, I'm anticipating a situation. I'm excited for it, but I'm still anxious because I'm like, you know, trying to get all the things done for it. And that might be like a sport trial in the dog world. It might be like your first agility trial. Or it could be like you're anxious because you are freaking scared that the world is going to blow up while you take your dog to their first training class, because, you know, maybe your dog's had reactivity in the past and incidents have happened, like whatever the case is. But being able to be like, okay, I am anxious right now. And then being like, okay, here's all the things that I'm going to work through and the questions that I'm going to ask myself to be able to work through this, take a deep breath, and then go on. Because it's not about eliminating the emotion. You aren't going to.
You're never going to eliminate it. Yeah.
Right. But learning how to like process it and handle it better is the key.
Yeah. And sometimes it's like identifying what's going on in your body and connecting it to your emotional state, and almost like giving, for me anyway, it's like giving myself permission to be like, oh, I know why I'm being like this. You know, because sometimes it feels unsettling if I'm like, oh my God, why do I feel nauseous right now? Why am I shaking? You know? And it's like, oh, okay, I'm getting ready to, you know, to interview somebody. Like, I don't want to mess it up. I know this is why I feel that way. You know, you have your notes, we're here, we got a plan, like it's gonna be okay.
Right.
It's a lot of that. And it's like, I feel like now at least I'm in a place where a lot of this can happen like almost like instantaneously, you know? Mm-hmm. But it's taken 20 years to get there, you know?
Right. 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 Well, once you like start doing it repeatedly, it is so much easier to identify it. And a lot of these questions that are in the journal can apply to more than just dog ownership. I mean, the way that the questions are framed are like with your dog, you know, and refer to like what happened with your dog kind of thing. But like some of these, you know, could easily be flipped to like workplace or child or husband, whatever it is. And I think that's like the really cool thing about the journal and about getting into this is that it can be applied to so much more.
You know, I think that we don't always realize, or I'm glad that you and I can talk about, right, for everybody, that like owning a dog can be a really emotional journey. And you know, I thought it was really gracious of yourself to be like, you know what, I was really naive when I got my dog. I kind of didn't know what I was getting myself into. Because I definitely didn't either. And I always feel like I was so fortunate that our first dog, Lucy, she was like such an easy dog. And it's what made it easy for me to fall in love with dogs, because mm-hmm. I was kind of like, I don't know about this whole thing.
Right.
I had, you know, I had no idea of like how, first of all, like how emotionally tuned in to us like our dogs were. Mm-hmm. And I tell this story on the very first episode of the Believe in Dog podcast. Like the moment that I fell in love with Lucy, I was reading a book. She had been with us for maybe like 2-3 weeks at this time, and I was still kind of like and I was reading a book, and whatever I was reading was making me cry. And so I was like sitting on the sofa, I like had a tissue, and I'm kind of crying. And she had been like, you know, kind of chewing, which on a rawhide, that I'm like now like, oh my God, I can't believe I gave my dog a rawhide.
Right. But, I have moments like that too.
And like the thing to do at the time. And she gets up and she kind of jumped up on the sofa with me and just kind of laid down and like put her head on my chest. And I was just like, oh my God, you know, like, and she just kind of laid with me. And I was just like, she just realized that I like needed a hug right now, you know?
Right.
And that was kind of this light switch moment for me of realizing like how in tuned, you know, attuned she was with emotions. And I mean, everything, you know, thing that we've been on with all of our dogs, you know, it's like, I'm so grateful for it. Like I had no idea that's what I was signing up for, but like, wow, right. Has it just been like the greatest experience, even though it's been like hard sometimes, and it's okay that it's hard sometimes. Cause I think we have these, I don't know if it's like an unreasonable expectation. I don't know if it comes from like watching movies and TV where all these dogs are so well trained that we think it's just like this easy thing to like bring a dog into our lives. And like,
right.
Yeah, a lot of times it's not, and it takes work.
Right. Yep. You are 100%. And like, I always think if we got another dog, I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm going to be so prepared, because like I went through so much with Layla. I know all the things now. And I kind of have to like hit myself sometimes, because I'm like, that's not how dogs work. Like each dog is different, and this dog could come with a whole new set of problems. And this isn't me announcing that we're getting another dog, because that won't come for a really long time. Layla is enough for right now. We always talk like, what do we think Layla would be like if we got another dog? Like, would she be fine? Would she be jealous? But yeah, it really does. It is just like this emotional roller coaster. That's a great way to describe it. And, you know, it's weird, because like there are so many people that have a dog and it's just a dog to them, right? And then there's people like us that we didn't really care if we had a dog or not in the first place. And now we're so into them. And it really does. It comes with ups and downs.
So you had told a story about trying to get Layla in the crate and realizing that like you were probably like, ah, and like,
right.
And then it kind of almost created this like negative association with the crate.
Right.
So are there any other stories where you can think of like, oh, I know that like my emotional state was affecting my dog in a certain way?
Oh, that's a really good question. I definitely do think that time, you know, my emotions probably had a huge part in it. And just to elaborate a little bit more on it. So up until that point, Layla was really good about going into her crate and sleeping in it. And she was fine. And then after our landlord started to come kind of unannounced, and there were some issues going on with her, but I would have to rush Layla into the crate. And, you know, I was in a high state of anxiety and very much in a rush. And that's like, there was just one night that we went to go put her up. Our landlord wasn't there. It was just like a typical night. And all of a sudden she just would go nuts whenever we would put our hand on the crate door to close it. And so it was specifically whenever we were closing the door and like latching it. After that, she was fine. She's perfectly fine. She'd go to sleep. She'd be cool. Opening up the crate door, totally fine. But yeah, it was honestly, it was probably like a year later whenever I kind of put all of this stuff together. I was talking about it with the trainer we were working with at the time, and she was really big on, you know, supporting the owner just as much as she was supporting the dog. And I'm really thankful that she kind of helped me put two and two together that it made that much of a difference. You know, my being in a rush, being in an anxious state, and how that all affected Layla. So there are times that Layla's aggression does kind of come up if we're traveling again. It's not as intense, but it's definitely there. If we're traveling, if, you know, she's had a stressful day. And I know now that at those times, I have to be very patient whenever I put her into her crate. I can't be in a rush at all. And if I am in a rush, then it definitely sets it off. Not as intense, but it can still get there. You know, she might let out a bark, or she might, like, you know, look tense. But yeah, I wanted to elaborate on that a little bit more, because it's definitely a very specific scenario. It's right. Not separation anxiety or anything like that. Let's see, other times that, you know, my emotional state has really affected her.
Or do you think it has?
Well, yeah, no, I'm sure there's probably tons and tons and tons of times. I can't think of anything super specific, like a very specific incident, but I do know, like, if I am anxious or just kind of like out in la-la land while I'm walking her, it definitely affects her. She's definitely more likely to react to dogs. She's not like aggressive towards dogs. She more so gets excited. But if I am present with her, never reacts. If I am on my phone or like not really paying attention and a dog is barking at her, I would say half the time she barks back. And so that's one instance of how, you know, my state affects her. And, you know, there are so many times that I have gotten frustrated with her for doing something. And this was, you know, earlier on. This doesn't happen as often now, but she would do something and I would, you know, just get frustrated with her. Maybe she didn't come when recall or when I called her, or she just like wasn't really listening. And there were so many times that I got frustrated, and me getting frustrated led to just more miscommunication between us. And that happened a lot. Honestly, now that I'm thinking about it, that used to happen so much. And it was just, you know, because she would do something and I wasn't able to control my emotions. And so, you know, I would overreact. I would react to her reaction.
Right.
And it wasn't helpful, and it led to a lot of miscommunication. So yeah, that's my answer.
I'm thinking of a time, and I'm going to say to my husband, Tim, I love you when I say this. We were out walking our dogs, and we live right near the high school for our neighborhood. And so we like to go and walk around the fields and mm-hmm. stuff. And they have they actually have like an environmental science class nature trail. And it's real nice over there. But all these other people like to use the baseball fields as an off leash dog park. And that's always very frustrating to us. And especially with us having pit bull dogs, mm-hmm. it's always been like super important to us, I guess, that we put a ton of responsibility on ourselves, that we don't ever want anything to happen because we don't want it to be like the pit bull's fault.
Right.
And somebody had another pit bull dog that was off leash, and we were trying to like walk as far away from them like as possible. Mm-hmm. And their dog just came hauling across the field, and my husband got really angry. Mm-hmm. And I feel like his reaction like blew it up into more than it needed to be. Because I think that dog would have been all right, and probably was, just being friendly and saying hi, as the woman who was showing no sense of urgency as she was casually shuffling across this, you know, giant field. Like, he's friendly.
Yeah.
But like the next thing you know, there's like, rawr, 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 and you know, Tim's legs getting stuck in the middle of things, and he's getting mad and angry. And I just, it was like, I was Penny and I were standing away, and it was like I could see the emotional, like the anger, like fueling this. Like, I feel like if we had just stayed calm and just been like, hey, stop, you know, we probably could have managed it in a different way. Because I don't think that that dog was trying to fight. I think he was just ill-mannered and not properly contained, you know what I mean?
Yeah, totally.
I just, I'm always curious if other people have experiences like that too.
Yeah, we've definitely had experiences like that. I actually get really jumpy if there is a dog behind a fence that kind of like barks out of nowhere. I get really jumpy. And sometimes whenever that happens and I do jump and get like scared, and not really like scared because it's a dog, scared because like I didn't know anything was behind this fence. And then all of a sudden, startled. Like I get startled. And that affects Layla a lot. And so, I definitely get that. And we probably don't realize how much our emotional state affects them sometimes and how our energy affects them.
And, you know, there's this thing that I hear, and again, there's kind of like memes shared about it, about like how all of our dogs are like emotional support dogs or something. And like, I get the humorous, you know, intent behind it, but like, I think it's unfair for us to like always expect our dogs to be like our emotional support system.
Totally.
Especially without any regard for like their emotional state.
You know? Right. That, and another thing that gets me is whenever people say like your dog is anxious because you're anxious. And like, yes, it could be true to a certain extent, but there are things that scare Layla that like would still scare her regardless of if I was anxious or not. You know what I mean? Like the first time she ever got scared of a skateboard, like I obviously was not scared and she still got scared, or I wasn't anxious and she still got scared. And so I really do not like whenever people say that and like making that conclusion.
I remember going to this dog training class one time with Penny, and this one woman in the class who I think was very anxious. She had a lot of problems getting her dog to cooperate, but then the trainer could handle her dog and get him to cooperate with no problem. And so that was like one of the first times to me where it did sort of sink in that like sometimes how your energy is affecting your dog. And I'm especially going back, you know, 7, 8, 9 years ago, I was kind of new to this understanding of like what our energy meant and like how it could affect. But, you know, I always like to give the example to people who raise their eyebrow or think it's like woo-woo of like, if you've ever walked into a room and you know that those people just had an argument.
Right.
Like, this is what I'm saying when I say, you know, energy. And so it's like, that's something that I've had to kind of learn to work on with myself with. And again, I sort of have my dogs as a reminder of like how I want to be, whether it's, you know, with other people or with my dogs, you know.
Right. Yeah. I've had to think about that a lot too. And as I'm getting like more into meditation, because that's something that I really like as well, you know, I'm able to like take some of those practices and apply it to outside of when I'm meditating, you know, practice that breathing technique to calm myself down and like, you know, get into that zone of like, okay, like it's okay. Like I can't control everything and, you know, just kind of like let it go for a little bit. And that has really helped in dog ownership and helped me to release some of that like perfectionist tendencies and not being able to control everything.
So when you were trying to find like training help for Layla, how did you find the person that you work with? Did you have to go to multiple people? Did you just luck out that the first person was a great fit? Did you do a ton of research?
Yeah. So whenever she first started having like aggression issues, I was calling every trainer nearby. Some people wouldn't come because it was like behavioral modification and aggression. Some people wouldn't come because it was during 2020 and the pandemic. And then I did have some people like give me advice, but that advice ended up like getting me bit because it was basically, you know, build up a positive association to the crate again, which I was like, okay, that makes sense. So I was hand feeding her in the crate, you know, sitting outside of it and giving her food while she was in a down inside the crate. And the door was open And like, I have a video of where I'm doing this. And if you watch the video, you can like see her like get really like, she's fine. And then it gets to like a point where she gets really intense. And like watching the video, you can like see like this dog's about to bite. And it wasn't like anything bad, but like she did like nip me a little bit. And so, you know, after that, I was like, well, I don't want to do that because it's making her uncomfortable. It's making me scared. It's like putting us in a bad position. And so I ended up going with this virtual trainer. So basically what would happen is that she would, like, I would go to close the door. She would react. I would disrupt that. And then like, I would basically say, okay, like this is what you should do. And then I'd put her in a down and I'd give her food and like build up the association that way. And so it was like a really long process. And so there's different aspects that I utilize now. Like we do utilize more like positive reinforcement type of things. But, you know, for the most part, like the way that I've trained has really shifted during the time of like trying to get into a manageable place and trying to get to where I can even breathe again. That was like very structured, very like the balanced training of like the hardcore, like, you know, place. And then whenever you're not on place, we're training. Or like if we're not training and you're not on place, then you're in your crate. And like just very, very structured and very, very routine. It was like she was in a 4-month board and train. And like I have so many regrets about that, honestly. Yeah, now like the way that I've trained has, or the way that I train her has really evolved over the course of time. But at the moment, whenever I was in such an anxious state, I was like, I want anything. Like I will do anything to like fix this. And so I think that is one thing that I wish was talked about more often is how people choose to do things in times of anxiety, in times of like really intense anxiety or stress. But yeah, that's basically my answer. So the trainer that I talked about earlier that, you know, really talked about emotions, I work with her on and off now.
Do you have any insight for somebody who might be dealing with a reactive dog and how they could go about getting help for their dog or themselves?
I would definitely research, talk to people who have, you know, utilized the trainers that you're thinking about going to. And if you can do it in person, do it in person. I think that's really important. And then, you know, there's so many people that do send their dogs to a board and train, which is fine, but they think sending them to a board and train is going to fix everything and that they like don't need to do any work after they get them back from a board and train. And like, that is not true. But yeah, just know that if you send your dog to a board and train, there's still going to be work to do. But yeah, I think the biggest thing is, you know, just researching all of your options. But like I said, like if you don't have if you're in like a really stressed time, maybe like get in a good place yourself before you find something to just do a quick fix, because having a reactive dog is not going to be a quick fix.
Yeah, it's a long game.
Yeah, for sure.
There's no overnight cures. So what motivated you to really start sharing about all of this with your dog on social media?
Yeah, it was really just, you know, I wanted to talk about the anxiety I was having for dog ownership and how it was hard and how I was going through challenges and how I didn't expect those challenges. And I, like I said, you know, I was already kind of into my own mental health and like doing that, but on my own, not really sharing about it. And I thought, well, if I share about it, like through the lens of my dog, maybe it would be more accepted. And I think it was easier because it was a dog account and like nobody that I knew followed me. So that's really how it got started.
And so I'll make sure we have links in the show notes to your social media, to your podcast, to your growing and healing. I just have to tell you, I'm so impressed with all that you have done in such a short amount of time, relatively speaking. I mean, I've been a dog owner for almost 20 years, you know, and like, you know, I think it's so impressive that you've evolved and, you know, are able to look back and see, oh, I made these mistakes. And I think it's brave to share those things because, you know, sometimes people on social media aren't kind when you share something that right. maybe you're not so proud about, you know, and that,
right.
you know, so I think it's so impressive how much you've accomplished in a short amount of time and to what seems to me to be a young age.
Well, thank you so much for having me on. And I do have a discount for your listeners. If they want to buy a journal, they can use the code BID10. So BID10 and get a 10% off your whole order from my website.
Oh, wonderful. Thank yeah. you so much. I'll make sure of we course. Have that in the show notes. And thank you so much for chatting with us today.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you so much to Caroline for sharing that space with me. I related so much to what she shared about having phases of being a dog mom. That's so true in my life. And with each of our dogs, we've had so many different phases. And I really love this practice of kind of sitting down and reflecting on these things and looking at where we've been and mistakes that we've made and what we've done well and what we can do better. And like I told Caroline, I'm so grateful to my husband, Tim, for being that person who will sit down and have those conversations with me. I think it's important to pat ourselves on the back for how we've evolved over time and to forgive ourselves for the mistakes that we made when we did the best we could with the knowledge we had at the time. I literally shudder about thinking about how we used to give Lucy raw hides. I was thinking that for us, I think some of the most stressful times that we've had as pet parents is when our dogs have had health issues. I think it was back in 2014, both Lucy and Kahlua were having health issues at the same time. They were both senior dogs at the time, and Lucy was having seizures, and they would often happen overnight, and I would find myself like being up overnight, like keeping vigil over her to see if she was okay. And I wasn't sleeping well. And I actually like made some big mistakes at my job and had to, you know, go in and explain to my boss that I hadn't, you know, slept in 2 weeks. And, you know, I'm so grateful I work somewhere where the response was that I could just, you know, work from home for a while until Lucy's health was stabilized. I know we're not all that fortunate. And believe me, I realize what a blessing that is. But Tim and I went through about this year and a half period of anticipatory grief and health stressors with both dogs, and then eventually, you know, losing both dogs. And I definitely think that was one of the most stressful times and one of the times it impacted my emotional health as a pet parent. And, you know, I've shared that my dog Penny recently, unexpectedly, passed away. And we've been tossing around the idea of whether we're going to bring another dog into our home and when. And, you know, the answer is yes, of course, we'll eventually bring another dog into our home. But the big question is when. And so far, the answer has been not quite yet. I know that that's going to be a huge change in our lives. And it's been, you know, 7 or 8 years now since we've welcomed another dog into our home. And I have a big cabinet of dog supplies now where we used to keep a crate, an extra crate. And so even just trying to figure out the logistics of what that would look like, you know, to where we keep another dog, you know, we've had to think about all those things and how it would impact Nino. And, you know, there's a lot of emotions and things that go into being a pet parent. And I really have to commend Caroline on this beautiful growing and healing journal. And if you're new to this idea of journaling, if you're rolling your eyes a little bit, I tell you, give it a shot. And I really love these guided journals where it's not just like a blank page where you have to figure out and stress about what to write about. I like having something to start me off. Because maybe you have things you don't want to talk about with somebody else, or maybe you're not in a position to be able to go to therapy right now, but just sitting down and getting some of these things out can really feel like a major weight off. There's somebody I'm going to put a link to in the show notes. There's this guy named Hal Elrod who has created this practice called the Miracle Morning, and he gives you these 6 steps to start your day off right and have like the best day ever every single day.
And I'm still working at incorporating all of those things into my life. But one of the things that he talks about is journaling. And I've learned so many different high achieving people who swear by journaling. And if you're a writer or a creative person at all, maybe you've heard of Julia Cameron and The Artist's Way, and she talks about doing morning pages and just sort of brain dumping everything out of your mind first thing in the morning to, you know, so you don't have that cluttering up your brain as you're trying to get through the rest of your day. And there's another journal that I've used in the past from Mel Robbins called The High Five Habit, and she gives you space to kind of do a brain dump and then also a space to think about what your goals are and what you're going to do today to move towards those goals. But as a pet parent, I think growing and healing is an amazing place to start this journaling practice and to start getting into your body and thinking about your emotions and what you're feeling and why and when and what brings these types of feelings up in your body. Caroline's done a really beautiful job, and I'm so grateful to her for offering everybody a 10% off discount with the code BID10. And I'll make sure that that is all listed in the show notes for you too. You can download an electronic, you know, PDF version, or if you're old like me and prefer an analog version where you can actually write in it, which I highly recommend. You can also get a physical copy from Caroline's website and she'll mail it right to you. And make sure you follow Caroline on Instagram. She's always doing videos, always talking about mental health related topics. And you can also check out her podcast, Dog Mom Mentality. I'll have a link to that in the show notes for you also. So that'll do it for this episode of the Believe in Dog podcast. If you like this episode, remember that you can always leave a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts. It's pretty much the biggest compliment that you can give a podcaster. You can always find me at Believe in Dog Podcast on Facebook, but I did want to mention that I changed the name on my Instagram. You can now find me at Erin the Dog Mom. Now, if you're already following me there, you're still following me there, nothing changed. But if you go looking for me now, or if you go to click on the link in the show notes, it's now under the name Erin the Dog Mom. So this way I can also share about the Alternative Dog Moms podcast that I do. I can share about the Dog Health Journal, and it's not just solely Believe in Dog podcast related. It's everything that Erin the Dog Mom is up to, which you're going to be hearing more about in the coming months. So until next time, this is Erin Scott sending you hugs and belly rubs. The Believe in Dog podcast is a production of Hugs and Belly Rubs, LLC.